Good afternoon. Is this mic on? Former Representative De La Forest, hear me? Can you hear me? I don't know if his mic's on. There he is. Former Representative De La Forest. Good afternoon and welcome to the first full tax committee hearing of 2009. And I think we've got the tape going, so we're just going to get started. And as everyone knows, we're running a little late because we just got off the floor, but it's great to see everybody. And we have a whole bunch of new people and a bunch of people who've been here before, and this should be just a great year, I think, and probably our most challenging. So we're looking for all ideas. I thought before we start with overview, we could just go around and introduce ourselves in any way people feel comfortable doing that. We want to have new members, and not just freshmen, but members who are new to the committee, know who all the players are here in Republican and Democratic staff, House Research, and any folks from the Department of Revenue. Feel free to come up to the table and tell us who you are. So with that, if we could just start by saying who we are, it will do members, and then we'll do staff. Okay, so I'm Ann Montesky, and I'm chairing this committee this year. It is my great honor. I represent the city of Bloomington. And if we can just go around this way, we'll just keep going. Welcome. We're going to skip staff first, though.
All right. I'm Roger Reinerts. I am a freshman from Bloom.
I'm Laura Budd, and I live in New Sprague, represent District 25A, and I'm very pleased to welcome Representative Marquardt to our side of the aisle.
Pat Rockwald in my third term. I'm from Farmington.
Accounting first term, so first term on this committee as well, District 41A from Edina.
I'm Jennifer Loon. I'm from Eden Prairie, District 42B, so I'm the new Eric Paulson, and very happy to be on your chair, Madam Chairman. Welcome.
Representative Maury Lanning from Moorhead, and starting my fourth term and fourth term on this committee.
Greg David, Fillmore, Houston County, starting my ninth term.
Rob Eastland, starting my fifth term from Cambridge Isani area, District 17A.
Representative Sarah Anderson from Plymouth, House District 43A.
Representative Kurt Zellers, fourth term in office and fourth term on tax committee, represent District 32B, which is Maple Grove and the entire city of Osseo.
Representative Paul Marquardt, fifth term, represent all the counties of Traverse and Wilkin and parts of Clay and Becker County, and it's nice to be right every once in a while.
I'm Lyndon Carlson. I represent all the city of Robbinsdale, a large share of Crystal, about a third of Golden Valley, one precinct from New Hope to the northwest suburbs. And actually, last year I sat in that chair most of the time, so it all seemed somewhat bipartisan. But I never felt I was making a turn to the right.
Representative Lyle Coonan, and I represent Chippewa County, Renville County, and east half of Yellow Medicine County in west central Minnesota. I'm just beginning my fourth term and third term on the tax committee.
Representative Maria Rood, and I'm from District 42A, which is southern Minnetonka and northern Eden Prairie. It's my third term and my first time on this committee.
I represent the north half of North Minneapolis.
I'm Paul Gardner from Shoreview in Ramsey County. I represent all a part of six cities in suburban Anoka and Ramsey County.
Tina Liebling. I'm a third termer, second term now on the tax committee. This is a great committee. We have a lot of fun, as you guys can see. There's no assigned seating, and I just want to say for the record, I sat here before most of these Democrats. So, you know, we like to mix it up in here, and I plan to do that. So don't get too safe over there, those of you who are new on the committee.
Deborah Hellstrom, I represent all of the city, Brooklyn Center, and parts of Brooklyn Park. This is my fifth term in the legislature and my second term on the tax committee.
I'm Lauren Solberg. I have District 3B, all of Aiken County, and parts of Itasca County, including the city of Grand Rapids. My second time on the tax committee, but my 14th term.
I'm Erin Murphy, and I'm from St. Paul.
I am a second termer, first time on the tax committee. I'm really glad to be here.
And I'm Representative Diane Lossler from Northeast Minneapolis, starting my third term, and it'll be my first time on the full committee. Last year is on the property tax division.
Okay, so the D's were late, so we've got, we still have to hear from, here's what I thought coming to introduce themselves, Dietrich, Detmer, Demmer, Scott, and Rukavina. So Representative Dietrich, tell us who you are.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I now understand why I'm perpetually late for everything. My last name starts with a D. Denise Dietrich, I represent House District 47A, which is all of Champlin and a portion of Coon Rapids. I am in my third term. I'm new to taxes, but was on the property tax division last year. Last session.
Yeah. I'm Representative Bob Detmer, District 52A, Northern Washington County and Eastern Anoka County. This is my second term, and I'm serving on the Property Tax Division. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm Randy Demmer, District 29A. I'm starting my fourth term here in the House. This is my second term on the Tax Committee, and looking forward to the year.
I'm Peggy Scott. I'm in District 49A, which is Andover and Ham Lake, and I'm on the Property Tax Committee, and I'm a freshman.
And of course, last but not least,
I'm Tom Rukavina, and I represent District 5A, and I think I'm the oldest, longest consecutive serving member on this committee.
Late, Johar?
Probably the oldest.
No, not the oldest.
Definitely the shortest.
Oh, no, I say stand back.
I win that prize, Representative Rukavina.
Representative Carlson.
Depending on how you define that, my first term in the tax committee was 1973, Representative, but it was not consecutive. Yeah. We had a conflict years ago with the appropriations. Which is now, I like to.
Thank you. Well, great. We want to hear who all the staff people are, and members who serve on this committee know that the staff are actually more important than the members on this particular committee. So you want to learn who all these people are. So if we can start with, how about House Research, starting with my left? And if you can tell us the subject area you're working to, that's helpful.
I'm Joel Michael from House Research, and I do corporate taxes, tax increment and all the stuff that other people don't want to do, which is the minor taxes. And if you want to know who to ask and don't know who, you can always call me up or you can call anybody else up in House Research and we'll shift you around to the appropriate person. And I won't tell you how long I've worked.
Nina Manzi, House Research, and I do primarily individual income tax, and I also work on the property tax refund.
Pat Dalton with House Research. For the full committee, I do sales taxes. I also do local government aid, local sales taxes, and levy limits.
I don't see Steve. I see Karen. Steve here?
Oh, there he is. He's hiding. Steve and Karen.
There you go.
Health
Research Department. I cover property
taxes
and
the
county
building.
Karen Baker,
property tax,
mortgage,
tax,
taxes,
boundary
letters. Say it. Just say it. Green anchors, too. And do a great job. Okay, and House, and thank you, Karen. So that's House Research, now House Fiscal Staff. Cynthia and Catherine.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Templin, and I cover state taxes in general. I also do Asian credit, district
spending
side of the
state. Thank you. And let's see. Well, we're right over there, so we've got DFL tax staff. And Laura. And I guess Mr. Cummings isn't here, but you all get to know him too. He's the committee administrator for, no, the committee LA for Representative Markworth's division, Paul Cummings, so I don't see him here. And then we've got Republican staff.
Craig Stone, Republican.
And I should have mentioned also, thank you for that, Craig, is Representative Broad and Representative Lanning are the Republican leads for the full in the division. So it should be a good year with that. And let's see, who am I missing? Right here. Of course, people who actually really run the show.
I'm Sarah Carl from Walrath, and I'm the committee administrator for both the taxes and the property tax division.
I'm Sasha Bergman. I'm the committee legislative assistant for the tax committee and Representative Lintrusky.
Okay. And the people that we all know and love, or well, you don't all know them yet, but you will love them, is our pages. So if you can tell us who you are.
I'm Megan Duncan. I'm from the city and for Talking Texas.
My name is
Dave Massey.
I'm
from the
Texas.
Thank
you.
Yes.
Can the pages give us a little bit of information about what they did before they came here? Because last one in the committee we had, she was a teacher in Japan in her previous career.
Well, yes. Megan, can you top that?
No pressure.
I'm a recent graduate of U of M.
Thank you. We also, I think Representative Shumpery came in. I don't know where he went. There he is.
I'm here.
And you're from where? Tell us who you are. Everybody knows you.
I'm Tom Tilbury, and I'm in my second term, and I also am from Fridley, Spring Lake Park, Moundsview, and a little bit of Blaine, which is 51B.
Okay, great. So if I missed a member, please wave. Is anyone here from the department, come on down and tell us who you are. Ms. Moser? Okay. Anyone else? We will have the department here a lot, and we've already been working with the department quite closely this year, so there'll be a lot more to come. So with that, I think that kind of covers introductions. Before we get started with what we're going to be working on as the overview, I just wanted to just make a couple preliminary comments. We're going to spend January understanding the Minnesota tax system. So for members who were here 2 years ago, when we went through the background briefing, we ended up taking more time than we ever dreamed we would, because members had so many questions, and we want to just continually, you know, obviously through the chair, interrupt our presenters and ask, because there is so much here, and I've heard the background briefing of every time I've been on the committee, and every time I learned something I did not know. And this is, I always think this is kind of the best information of the year, truthfully, are these overviews. So we want to just have everyone not feel that they shouldn't be asking. We want you to ask. The only other thing I wanted to say is, you know, I think people know that this committee will be a rough one this year in particular. I mean, it's always fairly rough when you look at, you know, this is really a core issue for people who run for office. So it's always a rough one, but I think it's going to be a really rough one. So as much as we can possibly, you know, kind of put off the battle, you know, for a couple more weeks, I think it's helpful if we just all get to know each other and just kind of learn the issue area, because I will be amazed if new members of this committee don't really learn to really kind of like everyone on the committee, even though they profoundly disagree with them. And that's part of the interest of the committee. So please, questions, just, you know, wave your hand, and we'll just get started with Ms. Templin, and we'll take all the time we need so people understand the Minnesota tax system. So if there aren't any questions, Ms. Templin, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, I'm Cynthia Templin from the House Fiscal Analysis Department. And this presentation today will cover state taxes, and we'll be continuing this discussion in subsequent hearings. I will cover the introductory slides for each of the tax types and provide basic revenue information and basic tax incidence information. And my colleagues in House Research will be providing more of the details, because there's a lot of details, and we'll try to touch on them. Moving along, the first slide, and again, we're on the PowerPoint presentation. The first slide shows you kind of a helicopter view of state tax revenues. And
I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second, Ms. Templin, just so everyone knows. So Ms. Templin's got her slides in your packet, but we're also going to be working off the documents in here kind of simultaneously, and this is the stuff you want to keep. So you can see it up there, but you can follow along in your packet as well. Ms. Templin.
On page 2 of the presentation, again, you're looking at the state tax revenue slide, And this pie is made up of both general fund and non-general fund tax revenues. And as you can see, the largest source of revenue comes from individual income tax at 44.2% of the pie. And that equals $7.375 billion. And for sales tax, that is 29.3%, or $4.8 billion of the total. And then all other taxes comprise 26.5% of the pie, or $4.4 billion. Looking at this pie, some say that state tax revenues should be balanced kind of like a three-legged stool. You know, is this stool balancing? Sure, this is something that will be discussed in depth this session. Moving on to page 3, income tax revenues. As we just discussed, income tax revenues are the largest share of the state tax revenue pie, 44% of the total. 100% of the income tax revenue goes to the general fund. So in other words, these revenues are not currently statutorily or constitutionally dedicated to any special funds. Also here, Minnesota has a reciprocity agreement with Wisconsin. This reciprocity agreement has been in place for 35 years, and Minnesota also has a reciprocity agreement with North Dakota and Michigan, but we don't require payment from those states. On page 4, moving on, individual income tax revenues. This slide shows a 10-year history of income tax revenues in real dollars and nominal dollars. And generally speaking, the trend line shows income tax rising except in recession years. So you can see in 2001 and 2008, we see slight dips in income tax revenues. Moving on to page 5 of the presentation, if there are no questions. Here, these slides are just a prelude to the tax incidence discussions that you'll be hearing this session. And it's the first of several slides on tax incidence in this presentation. In these slides, we'll be talking about effective tax rates and about who pays the tax. And also, during the session, the Department of Revenue will be providing more in-depth research about tax incidence when they release their next report in March 2009. But again, going back to this slide, effective tax rates, what is it? It is an effective tax rate is the ratio of tax burden to income. And the data that you see in this presentation is also, it's aggregated in quintiles. And you can see the bottom quintile, which is the first quintile, includes 20% of the lowest income, the poorest households. And you can see in this slide that minus or negative 0.7% of households in that quintile pay minus 0.7% of their income to income taxes. And the highest quintile or the richest quintile, the top 20%, pay 5.5% of their income to income taxes. Moving on to slide 6. This shows the percent of total of income taxes paid by quintiles. So in the first quintile, the lowest 20% pay negative 0.6%. And the highest quintile pays 71.9% of their income taxes, or of their income to income tax. Okay. And Nina Manzi will be providing the rest of the walkthrough on income taxes.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. And before we jump to Ms. Manzi, we are going to adjourn on time. For people who are trying to now refigure all their meetings that followed this meeting, I think we have to be out here at 4:15, and we will be. So, Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from the Health Research Department. Minnesota's individual income tax
which if any of you have ever filled out your own individual income tax form, you know that the order you do it in is you first fill out the federal income tax form, and you get to the income number at the end of the federal income tax form called federal taxable income, and that number transfers over to the first line on your Minnesota income tax form. Because Minnesota relies on the federal income tax for a lot of our definitions, including our starting definition of taxable income, that makes it easier for taxpayers to comply and easier for the Department of Revenue to administer our tax. If we had a different definition of income, you would have to start all over and put in your wages and your interest and your dividends and your capital gains and your business income according to whatever rules we had developed. So it's much simpler for everyone for us to just follow along with the federal definitions. This also allows us to share the burden of administering and enforcing the tax with the federal government. So if they do an audit of a return and find that someone had underreported for an income item, or they had not claimed the standard deduction and they should have, the IRS will notify that taxpayer, and they also will share that information with our Department of Revenue so that they can follow up on any effects that it has on that individual state income tax return. I think I probably already used the word deduction. That's on the next slide. There are two terms for tax preferences, two types of tax preferences that we'll see a lot of proposals for, probably not so many in this year as we would see in a year if there were a budget surplus, but those terms are deductions and credits. I mentioned federal taxable income, and then there's also Minnesota taxable income. A deduction is something that reduces your taxable income. So the value of a deduction to you as a taxpayer is whatever your tax rate is multiplied by the amount of that deduction. A credit, in contrast to a deduction, directly offsets your tax liability. So you get to your taxable income, apply the tax rates to it, or look up your tax in the tax table, find out what your tax is, and then if you have a credit, you get to take the credit rate off of that total tax liability at the end. Minnesota has quite a few deductions, and we have more and more credits every year. We have a handful of deductions that are required by federal law. Federal law prohibits us from taxing U.S. bond interest, railroad retirement benefits, and then on-reservation earnings by members of Indian tribes. We also have additional deductions that we chose to implement ourselves for various policy reasons. The most major of these are listed on the slide. We probably should have mentioned the difference between these two documents. You also have in your packets a longer document, a thicker document, a Word document, which contains a lot more detail than is on the slide. So if you want to learn more about any of these taxes, one place to start is in reading through this document. So our biggest, most commonly used deductions at the state level are the deduction for K-12 education expenses. And then we have a charitable contribution deduction for people who don't itemize, an elderly subtraction for low-income elderly filers, primarily those who do not receive Social Security benefits, an active service military pay subtraction, and then a subtraction for organ donation expenses. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the K-12 education expense deduction on the next slide, but I want to make a couple comments about the other subtractions listed on that earlier slide. The charitable contributions for non-itemizers deduction was put in place in order to provide some recognition in the tax system for charitable contributions made by people who claim the standard deduction at the federal level. People who claim itemized deductions at the federal level get to include in their itemized deduction and their charitable contributions, and there was nothing comparable to that for charitable contributions at the state level. This subtraction allows people who make charitable contributions but who don't itemize to subtract 50% of the amount they contribute to the extent that the total amount they contribute to all charities throughout the year is more than $500. There are a handful of other states who have something like this. On the active service military pay, what's in effect for tax year 2008 is a subtraction for members of the Guard and Reserve who are called to active service within Minnesota, such as for floods or for airport security, people who are called to active service outside the state, and people who are not residents of Minnesota but who are stationed in Minnesota performing active service. And that's primarily going to be recruiters, and then there are some auditors in place at the defense contractors here in Minnesota. That was expanded to include some other categories of military pay last session, effective in tax year 2009. If anyone has any questions about what we tax in military pay and what we don't tax, we could have an entire overview on the ins and outs of military pay, but I'd be happy to try to answer your questions on that. The K-12 education deduction is allowed for all taxpayers regardless of their income. Parents can deduct up to $2,500 of expenses for each child they have in grades 7 through 12 and $1,625 for each child they have in grades K through 6. A little bit later, I'll talk about the K-12 education credit. The deduction applies to all the same expenses as the credit, with one exception, and that exception is tuition. Tuition is only allowed for the deduction and is not allowed for the credit. So it's maybe not quite as simple as it could be for taxpayers, but in general, if something qualifies for the credit, it also qualifies for the deduction. And the one exception is a relatively big item that it's fairly easy for people to remember. This deduction applies to things like transportation expenses that you pay to have your child go to school that you pay to someone else, costs for academic summer camps, costs for tutoring, musical instruments, required supplies for classroom use, textbooks, and those sorts of things. Minnesota has three income tax brackets, and the slide shows what the brackets and rates are for tax year 2009 for married joint filers. We have a filing system like the federal government that separates the taxpayers into four filing types: married joint, married separate, single, and head of household. Most families in the state file a married joint return. So for this family, they would start with all of their income being reported on their 1040, all of their wages and interest, and if they had a small business, their small business income. Then they would get to take off either their itemized or the standard deduction at the federal level. Then they would get to take off personal and dependent exemptions. So each adult taxpayer in a married couple, it would be two, gets one personal exemption, and then they get an exemption for each of their dependents. And that gets you to federal taxable income. Then you take federal taxable income off the bottom of your federal return, write it on the top line of your Minnesota return, and then you start in with your Minnesota additions and deductions. So if you had any of those children in grades K through 12 and had school-related expenses that qualified, you get to subtract those. If you were a member of the military who had been called up to service to help out with a flood or a fire here in Minnesota, if you were a Guard member, you get to subtract the pay you got for that. You get done with that, and you get to Minnesota taxable income. So this is going to end up being a smaller number than what you think of as your income, which is generally what you think of as your salary or what you make in the year. And it's to that smaller Minnesota taxable income that this system of three rates is applied. The first $33,220 of taxable income is taxed at a rate of 5.35%. The next chunk, up to $131,970, is taxed at 7.05%, and then any income over that is taxed at 7.85%. These brackets are indexed each year for inflation. Under the current forecast in tax year 2010, the Minnesota Management and Budget Department is forecasting that we actually will have a small amount of deflation. So in tax year 2010, we'll see these brackets go down if their current forecast projection is correct, and that will be the first time that we've seen that in the time that I've worked here. Every other year they move up a little bit for inflation, but in 2010 we may see them go down a little bit. The brackets for single filers are smaller than for married joint filers, and then the brackets for head of household filers, which is our other filing status, fall in between the single and the married joint brackets. A head of household filer is what we think of as a single parent. So somebody who's got a dependent and is responsible for that individual gets more preferential treatment in the tax bracket than does a single person without dependents. Okay, I touched on deductions and credits and told you those were two sorts of tax expenditures that had different effects. One reduced income and one offset liability. Now I'm going to tell you that there are two types of credits. There are non-refundable credits and refundable credits. Let's say you get to the end of your Minnesota tax return and figured your liability and you have $1,000 of liability. If you qualify for a credit, if it's a non-refundable credit, you can have up to $1,000 of a non-refundable credit and use it against your $1,000 of tax liability. But if you qualify for a $2,000 non-refundable credit, you can only use $1,000 of it. So it can only be used to offset your liability. A refundable credit is a credit where there's an appropriation to the Department of Revenue in statute, and if you are eligible for a credit that's greater than your liability, the excess is sent to you as a refund check. So in that example, you have $1,000 of liability, you qualify for a $2,000 refundable credit, the first $1,000 of it offsets your liability, and the next $1,000 of it is sent to you as a tax refund, or we will refer to that as a tax expenditure sometimes in committee. And those all have appropriations for them in statute, and they're included in Minnesota Management and Budget's economic forecast that they do each 2 years as part of how much we're going to collect in income tax revenue. The four main non-refundable credits that we have are the marriage penalty credit, sometimes just called the marriage credit, the credit for taxes paid to other states, the long-term care credit, and starting this year, tax year 2009, we also have a credit for past military service. The marriage penalty credit was enacted in 1999 as part of the income tax rate reductions enacted in that year. There was concern among taxpayers from various places, not taxpayers, legislators, that there are marriage penalties in Minnesota's rate and bracket structure. You remember that I showed earlier that the first rate on married couples goes up to $33,000 and something of taxable income. Well, the first rate for a single filer goes to something that's greater than half of that. So what happens is that if you have two single filers who get married, they will suddenly be paying less tax at the 5.35% rate and more tax at the 7.05% rate than they did as individuals when they weren't married. This is described as a marriage penalty. The simple way to get rid of a marriage penalty is to just say, okay, the brackets for married joint filers are going to be twice as big as the brackets for single filers. At the time, and we had a surplus in 1999, but people didn't want to spend all the money that it would cost to make the brackets as big as it was necessary to do that, to get rid of the penalty by just adjusting the brackets. There also were other people who were concerned about situations where you had a married couple in which one spouse worked and the other spouse did not work. So they didn't really have a marriage penalty. They had the opposite, a marriage bonus if you just gave them double the brackets. So they tasked us with coming up with some way to deal with this without just doubling the bracket. And we developed a credit working with the Department of Revenue that is based on a calculation of how much each spouse has in earnings, and then the credit equals the difference between what they would have paid on their earnings as single filers compared to what they are required to pay as married filers. Fortunately, the taxpayers don't have to go through the formula to figure out what this credit amount is. Instead, they get to look up in a table that lists the earnings of each spouse and it lists their taxable income amount and shows what their credit is. The maximum for tax year 2009, which has just started, is just over $300. and this credit is projected to cost $61.5 million in fiscal year 2009. To give you an idea of the difference between this credit approach and the simple doubling of the brackets, back in 1999, it would have cost about $100 million a year to double the brackets, and the credit that we enacted instead of that cost around $50 million. So it was about half the cost to get at the problem a different way.
Councilmember.
Can I ask to interrupt?
Yes, please.
Well, you have the cost in fiscal year 09 at 61.5. That figured already into the forecast, I would assume. So is it safe to say that the next biennium would be twice that much, or is it since the half year more than that?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, are you asking if the full biennium would cost twice the 61?
Yeah.
It would cost roughly that. Each year is a little bit different depending on what Minnesota Management and Budget is forecasting for growth in earned income of taxpayers and what our brackets are. So, but it's, you know, I noted that it started at $50 million in 1999 and it's $61.5 million now, so you can see it's grown over the 10-year period, but it hasn't grown remarkably or anything.
Rep. Garoppolo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The credit for taxes paid to other states, is that limited to just income taxes paid in other states or other forms of taxation?
Mandy.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, that's just income taxes paid to other states. And that's a good segue. I'll talk about that a little bit. We don't have a slide for it, but the way that works is that if you have income tax liability in more than one state, I guess the simple case is if you move from one state to another state during the year, most states require you to figure your tax for that state based on your total income for the year, and then you apportion that to the state that you're filing a return for based on the share of your income that is sourced to that state. So if you live half the year in Wisconsin, well, Wisconsin's bad because of reciprocity, so let's say Missouri, and then you move to Minnesota, you would apportion your Minnesota liability based on the share of your income that was based on your Minnesota earnings, and then you would have to do the same thing on your Missouri tax return. When that was over, you would get to take a credit on each one for the tax that you paid in the other state, so that you're not double taxed.
Rep. Graffel, more? No? Okay. Thank you. Rep. Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Manzi. Two of us, I think, represent most of the international border. Does that include foreign countries as well? Because I have a lot of people that live in Minnesota that work in Ontario. And I'm just wondering if the same question as Representative Garofalo answered, except now we're talking rather than a state, a foreign country.
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Bill, that issue is actually handled for the most part at the federal level. There's a federal foreign tax credit that people in that situation will fill out and offset against their federal liability. Several years ago, there was a subtraction enacted in Minnesota. An issue arose with people who paid subnational income taxes to other countries, for example, to provincial income taxes in Canada. This particular issue came to the attention of the legislature resulting from taxes on German Länder, which are the equivalent of states in the country of Germany. And we enacted, in place of a credit, we enacted a subtraction. So if your constituents are paying provincial taxes to Canada, they get to subtract those taxes on Form M1M when they fill out their Minnesota return.
Thank you.
Okay, the next non-refundable credit that we have applied for is the long-term care insurance credit. This credit equals 25% of premiums paid for long-term care insurance during the tax year. The maximum credit is $100 per beneficiary, so a married couple, if each spouse has a policy, can take a credit of $200 against their tax for the year. This credit is projected to cost $7.4 million in fiscal year 2009. Starting in 2009, we will...
Yes. I'm sorry. Could I ask Ms. Manzi, is that phased out at a certain income level or not, the long-term care credit?
Ms. Manzi. Madam Chair, Representative Loon, that credit is not subject to any income phase out.
Okay. Thank you.
Starting in 2009, we have a credit for past military service. Will be allowed for individuals who retired with 20 years of military service or who separated from the military due to a full disability. The credit equals $750, but is phased out for those claimants with income over $30,000. And that $30,000 figure where the phase-out starts includes the military retirement income. This credit is projected to cost $10.3 million in fiscal year 10, which is the first fiscal year that it will be in effect.
Madam Chair?
Mr.
McKenzie, when does it go to zero? What's the what income level?
Ms. Manzi. Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, $37,500. So it stays out at a rate of 10% of income over $30,000.
Representative Carlson.
Going back to the military disability, you said fully disabled, and many of the veterans that are disabled will be getting a percentage, and they may be 50% disabled or 80% disabled. Are you saying that they only get the tax deduction then if it's full 100%?
Madam Chair,
I came
up
at a town hall meeting 2 years ago. I'm
curious. Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, that has to do with eligibility for the credit, and I don't believe that they have to have, I know they have, as you said, these disability ratings where they're rated as to what percent they're disabled. I think for the purposes of the credit, this means that their separation from the military had to be due to a disability. I don't think that it necessarily means they have to be 100% disabled. In most cases, if an individual is 100% disabled and they're receiving a military disability pension, then that pension income is exempt at the federal level and also exempt at the state level because we conform to that item as it goes into federal taxable income. I'll verify that for you. This military stuff gets a little tricky, but in this case, we didn't want to, when this credit was being developed, we didn't want to deny it to people who had failed to serve 20 years, but who had left the military due to a disability. So I don't think it's tied to the rating.
Thank you.
Ms. Manzi, if I may. Mr. Michael has an advantage on you because he's got the statute book. So, Mr. Michael, you want to answer Representative Carlson's question just briefly?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in order to be a qualified individual, if you don't have the 20 years, then you do have to have 100% total and permanent disability rating in order to receive the credit.
And Mr. Michael, maybe Representative Rukavina can tell us it's his bill, I think. What kind of rating do you have to have the property tax exemption? Was that proportional?
No, I think the House Chair members that
100% for the property tax.
There's tears on that. You get it.
Yeah. We'll get that another day. But it does get confusing, members, because it depends what tax system we're in. And we'll get to that when we get to the property taxes. But that might have been the confusion in the town hall as to what that... Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I mentioned a number of years ago, I think the individual involved was rated at 80%.
Okay.
Which means quite a major disability.
Right.
And that was the question. You know, apparently you were correct in raising the question, but we're not able to draw get the credit then because we were
just.
Mr. Michael.
No, Madam Chair, this is a brand new credit that no one's received to this point, so I don't think that there are lots of other things that you qualify for benefits based on disability ratings, including, as the Chair was referencing, the property tax provision. But this credit first takes effect for tax year 2009. And so I don't think anybody would have.
Okay. And I think for members who may be new, I think the provision we're on right now, it was the governor's initiative that he wanted last year and achieved, and then there were some changes to it. And I think Representative Severson carried an amendment on the floor as it relates to this provision. It's not identical to either one of those proposals, but came out of conference. Is that right, Ms. Manzi?
Madam Chair, that's generally correct. The governor's budget and Representative Severson both had proposed subtractions for military pension income, and then what was enacted coming out of conference following discussions with the governor's office and the House and Senate was a credit that was targeted more at lower income military retirees.
Thank you.
I think the only thing I would add, which I hope doesn't further muddy the waters on the disability ratings, is that it's my understanding that people who are military retirees may have their disability percentage rating adjusted from year to year, and it's not something that's fixed at the point when they separate from the service. So it may be the case that someone who did indeed have 20 years of service and is eligible for the credit that way may subsequently come to have a very high percentage disability rating. So we have got those two pathways to get there. Maybe if, yeah, I'll just stop with that.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, next, the next group of credits are our refundable credits. The three that have been in effect for a relatively long time are at the top, and newer ones are at the bottom. The oldest of these is sort of in the middle. It's the dependent care credit. And then the next one, which dates back to 1990, is the working family credit, followed by the K-12 education credit. The working family credit is by far the largest of all of these refundable credits. I'm certain it's more than all the other ones added up. The working family credit originally was enacted as a share of the federal earned income credit. This grew out of President Nixon's proposals for a negative income tax. The federal earned income credit is a wage supplement to low-income individuals who have earnings. So if you are working at a low-paying job, the federal income tax sort of rewards you for that effort by giving you a refundable credit that equals a percentage of your earnings, and that is then phased out as your income increases. Minnesota was one of the first states to enact a match to the federal earned income credit that applied against our own income tax that was enacted in 1990. Our credit started out being 10% of the federal credit. It has increased over time to be, for many taxpayers, roughly 25% of the federal credit. We decoupled from the federal credit in the late 90s, but retained a lot of ties to a lot of the definitions in the federal credit. You can see that this is a substantial credit. It's over $1,700 in tax year 2009 for an individual who has two or more children and who claims this credit. $911 if you have one child, and then it's a small amount for claimants without children. The amount for claimants without children is available only to individuals with incomes up to around $10,000, and it's structured to offset the federal payroll tax on their earnings. It's not allowed for claimants who are under 25 years old or over 64 years old. So working students cannot claim the credit for people without children, nor can people who go back to work as a senior citizen at low income for a part-time job during the week. The credit is based, subject to an income-based phase-out. The next slide shows the maximum incomes eligible in 2009. So it goes up fairly far. It gets adjusted each year for inflation, as do the maximum credit amounts. The total dollar amount of the working family credit is estimated to be $160.1 million in fiscal year 2009. The average in 2006, which is the last actual year that we have data from the Department of Revenue, is $550. And there were 267,603 individuals who claimed this credit in 2006. that's a lot of people. That's close to 10% of everybody who files an income tax return in Minnesota. So this is the most significant credit that we have in terms of the number of people who claim it and the total dollar amount that it costs.
Okay, with that, Ms. Manzi, and with staff and members, are there questions on the working family credit? You know, I know you've mastered all this now. Everyone gets the whole income tax system. We're done, you know, it's very complicated. And members, we're going to finish up here with the working family credit and adjourn, and we'll pick up where we were. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Manzi, do we have a summary of all the credits and what it costs?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, I don't have a single page on that. The tax expenditure budget that the Department of Revenue prepared last year, it's prepared every other year in the even-numbered years, lists all the credits and what they're projected to cost. I think we can make a one-page summary for you of the individual, what all the credits are projected to cost in fiscal year 9 and then 10 and 11, either Ms. Templin or I.
That would be helpful. Thank you.
Yes, that's a good idea, and if we could get that, no hurry on that. Members, keep this stuff for the next time that we'll be doing this. But I see this, Representative Lanning just made me realize something. We're going to look at the tax expenditure book as a committee. We're going to review the tax incidence report in March. And we're going to hear from the state budget trends working group tomorrow. And then we're going to hear the governor's tax reform commission. So we're going to have a lot of, we're going to get kind of buried in information in the beginning here. But that'll help a lot of us start understanding this a lot better. But if we could get that one page or just of the credits that you have in your handout, I think that would be helpful. Other questions? If not, thank you, members. We are adjourned.